About 18 years ago, I tried my first...
You can go up to the lectern.
You'll hear me, Judge, but I will.
Okay.
I was afraid of feedback.
No, no, don't worry about it.
About 18 years ago, I tried my first first-degree murder case against Judge Fisher. I stand before you today looking at least 20 years older, and he looks 10 years younger.
I understand
that all injustices do not fall within the jurisdiction of this court, so I won't ask you to cure that one. The case before you does. You might look at this case and think it's about a discrete constitutional issue about dog shelters. Well, that happens to be what I care about, but you should care about it for a different reason. The respondent's entire case is based upon a misinterpretation of the Dillon case, this court's case. That case must be abrogated or at least interpreted appropriately. The Dillon case relies on two cases, the Bank of Washington case and this court's Peeble case in 1936. The Bank of Washington case has nothing to do about a constitutional issue. It merely says what mootness means. You can look at Black Dictionary. It means that I would be up here, and if you were to rule in my favor, it would make no difference whatsoever. That is not the case here. Because the unconstitutional defect in 795 was reenacted into Senate Bill 161.
So why don't you attack 161?
Because the constitutional defect is not in 161. The constitutional defect was transported from 795 into 161 in Section B. Section B of Senate Bill 161. The title to 161 says, we're going to repeal and enact in lieu thereof, which is what the Dillon case talks about. But the law is what the bill did. And if you look into Section B says we are repealing and reenacting.
Counsel,
273.
If we accepted your argument that basically repealing and if you pass a statute improperly, original purpose or for other reasons, you cannot correct it by repealing it and reenacting it in a proper manner. That's your argument, basically.
I agree with the first half, and that is the ultimate distinction, Judge, because they did not cure it.
But they passed it as a separate law? Is that what? Otherwise, you'd be attacking the second bill, so it must have...
Right, the constitutional defect is in 795. Senate Bill 161, right, the whole idea, what are the reasons behind Article 21, the original purpose? It is to provide notice to the public, to provide notice to the General Assembly, and to prevent law rolling.
But why is that not addressed by enacting a new statute that does all those things?
It didn't. 161 had nothing to do with the removal of the exemption at issue. It wasn't bolded. It wasn't discussed. It wasn't part of the title.
People might not realize that. What they would think they were just voting on the increase in the fine and not realize
exactly.
That was. But if you're just, I'm trying to understand the implications if we were to agree with your argument. I know we have a separate provision that says you have to bring a claim that something was enacted improperly within a year or 18 months after the enactment.
Within the end of the subsequent legislative session.
Say we didn't have that. Then you could go back to the 1920s and say, you know, that was an improper bill.
Yeah, but we do have that. And here's what the crux of that is. This is what the interpretation of Dillon that the Attorney General suggests to you. It means any time a member of the public files a constitutional challenge within the constitutional parameters before the end of the next legislative session, the legislature can obliterate that challenge by simply repealing and reenacting the bill.
So
it doesn't have to do anything.
So what's wrong with that? I mean, the practical effect is the bill that you're challenging is abrogated, so isn't that moot?
it's not moot at all if our Constitution means anything. Article 21, it says that the legislature is not to pull the wool over the eyes of the public.
But they've corrected the problem. They've abrogated it. They repealed it.
How did they correct it?
They repealed it.
Judge Russell, I mean no respect. How did they correct the problem? The problem in 795 is a bill about dynamite spent 4 months in the legislature and 7 business days before it was passed. It took away my client's exemption. If I had known about it, I know of 5 senators, I would have had my nose on the end of theirs. I didn't.
But the problem's now been mooted.
161, no discussion, no highlighting. The bill had nothing to do with the
but
exemption.
Nothing
there was no hearing? They didn't have a hearing on the bill?
Well, they had a hearing on the bill, but the bill changed a different part of the statute.
But there's a public hearing, there's notice of the hearing, there's notice of what the statute is about. Anyone can come and testify?
Well, the bill is about the changes. It was about the puppy mill compromise.
Counsel,
it was all about, the bill was about what puppy mills need to do, how many crates they can have, and so forth and so
Counsel,
on.
Counsel, you could have testified against having any fee imposed on your clients, any licensing fee under the revised bill. Even though what it did was raise it from 500 to 2,500 as the maximum, you could have said there shouldn't be, we should go back to the old days prior to the earlier version of the statute when there was no fine at all. I don't understand why you're saying
it wasn't an issue.
Because
it
wasn't highlighted, therefore, somehow it didn't negate the prior improper method of passage.
It wasn't part of 161. It wasn't subject to the debate. The debate was not about whether
that's your choice, is my
exempt.
Point. Counsel, that's your choice, isn't it? I mean, you could have debated that. You could have said we should get rid of this entirely.
I think the question Judge Stith is asking is when it is in a bill, simply because people choose to take an interest in certain parts of that bill and debate them, doesn't mean the rest of the bill is not there and available to be debated.
If you believe that within 7 days of the bill's passage, when it was a bill about dynamite for four months.
No, we're talking about that bill.
That's the bill. It's the bill.
161. No, we're focusing on 161. So tell me why.
The bill about how puppy mills should be regulated. I should have gone and said, even though the removal of the exemption that took place a year and a half ago is a fait accompli, I think that should be part of the bill that isn't part of the bill, and I think you should change the bill. I guess I could have done that. The problem with that is it has nothing to do with the constitutional defect that took place in Senate Bill 795. It is not incumbent upon the public to go to a hearing and encourage the legislature to alleviate the prejudice from their unconstitutional conduct the year before. That's not what our Constitution says.
You're saying the provision in the statute that was abrogating and reenacting had no effect. I mean, there is that.
I'm saying
in the exact
opposite. The bill said it was going to remove it and enact new statutes in lieu thereof, which is the Dillon case. I still think that's a very dangerous message to the legislature. That anytime someone challenges the Constitution, all you need to do is repeal and reenact it. Don't change anything. It's going to be Senate Bill 100, a bill to reenact and enact in lieu thereof 273. It doesn't do anything.
Well, the problem is how it was enacted the first time, and you fix that and enact it again correctly the second time. Why isn't that just something the Constitution might permit and the legislature might want to encourage? I'm unclear what the negative public policy is.
I know, Judge Stith. I'm just not on the same page with you. They did not.
You should try to get there, though. So you should.
I know. I'm trying. I'm not going to give up.
What practical effect would there be for us resolving this controversy about a procedural alleged defect in 2010? What's the practical effect? Why should we
resolve
this?
That's a great question. That goes exactly to the state of Washington, or the Bank of Washington. Called it the State of Washington case. I don't know why. It's the Bank of Washington case. It says that if you were to rule in my client's favor, there'd be no effect whatsoever. It'd be academic. Not true. Because if you ruled in my favor and said that you cannot take a bill about dynamite, which was the original purpose, and at the last minute put something about not-for-profit dog shelters in it, that that violates Article 21. And so you would be voiding the removal of my client's exemption. Okay, so we go back. The law now has my client's exemption in it. In Senate Bill 161, they repealed and reenacted the law. Okay, so they would take now your curative effect, which means my exemption is back, and the legislature in 161 subsequently took that law and put it into today's law. So everything about 161 would be fine. You can sever unconstitutional provisions, but the exemption for not-for-profits would be back. So it's not moot. It's
Counsel,
not
what,
moot.
What is the remedy that you're seeking specifically?
To declare the provision which removed the exemption in Bill, Senate Bill 795 to be unconstitutional because it violated the Article 21 original purpose provision. The original purpose of the bill, and for 4 months, was about dynamite on a farm.
I understand. Then you, okay, you now have that relief.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 161 passed and put the statute in without your exemption.
No, they
so
didn't.
What effect have you achieved? Senate Bill 161 enacted that statute without the exemption.
They put that into 161. Not knowing it was void,
but
because
bill,
by definition, I'm sorry, Judge Wilson, you can only challenge a statute until the governor signs it into effect.
So you're also
so by definition, you're always challenging the statute after the subsequent legislature is done.
Counsel, so
yes?
you're asking us to invalidate 161 also?
No.
Well then. Can you answer Judge Wilson's question about what's the effect if we invalidate a statute that no longer has any
Senate
effect?
Senate Bill 161 is, and I want to get to another point. Senate Bill 161 is as is, but the exemption is still in because the exemption that was transported in was constitutionally
but you're
void.
Asking us to invalidate that that lack of exemption in 161?
No.
Okay, then there's no exemption now. So what relief did you get?
You have invalidated the exemption in 795. Its voidness existed at the time the constitutional defect happened.
How does that benefit your clients? I'm unclear.
Because the exemption was never removed, because that act in 2010 was void. When the legislature in 161 repealed and moved that language into law, the exemption is there. It was a nullity. It was a constitutional nullity.
So would
nullity.
You get your money back? I mean, if the exemption's removed from 795, then you paid money in, and then you would get that money back because 795 is a nullity?
I guess we would.
So you're saying that the language saying there can be a license fee of up to $2,500 has no effect? Is invalid really
no, it,
means
no,
you're exempt?
It is, no, that's a different section of the section. That's the whole point. Senate Bill 161 had nothing to do with the exemption at issue. It simply raised the amount of money that my clients were no longer exempt from paying. Mm-hmm. So everyone, all the profit, the people that raise animals for a profit, and they raise them in an amount which exceeds the demand. And so, my fiancé already has a dog, or the dog doesn't get along with the kids. All those dogs that end up in animal shelters, and the not-for-profits care for them. Now, the legislature, in background, a legislative tit-for-tat, by the way, the legislature says, well, you want to inspect puppy mills? Then you're going to pay the fee for it. And so now the puppy mills, which is the majority at issue here, will continue to pay the fee, which they can incorporate it into the cost of the dogs they're churning out. The only issue would be that the not-for-profits, the 501c3s, would again be exempt from paying the government to inspect the for-profit puppy mills.
Right.
That's the effect.
What you're saying is you don't care how high the fee is as long as you have your exemption.
Exactly, Judge Fisher. Exactly. And we used to have our exemption, and it was great public policy. Why should not-for-profits that take the discharge from for-profits have to pay to inspect the for-profits? Why? Because we had the guts to challenge puppy mills. So in a committee 7 days before the bill passed about dynamite, they took away our exemption. That is legislative shenanigans, which this court needs to explain Dillon, so not only is it, does it not stand in this case, but that it's not invited in the future.
Thank you very much. You have time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court?
Yes, it does. Go ahead.
My name is Jessica Bloom. I'm an attorney for the state of Missouri in this case. Any decision by this court regarding the constitutionality of Senate Bill 795, as enacted in 2010, has evaporated. Any decision by this court would not have any practical effect on the controversy today. Mr. Cosgrove, on behalf of his client, the Humane Society of the United States, makes a compelling public policy argument. But this court's job isn't to evaluate whether or not the public policy decision that the legislature made in 2010 and reaffirmed in 2011 is good policy. This court's job is to determine whether or not Senate Bill 795 was enacted unconstitutionally, and it was, or I'm sorry, is to determine whether Senate Bill 161 was enacted constitutionally, and because there's no challenge to Senate Bill 161, the only answer is that everything is constitutional to date. Now, in Missouri, a claim is moot if an appellant seeks a judgment on a matter which has no practical effect on any controversy today, or if the statute on which the litigants rely to assert their claim has been abrogated. Here we have both. The appellant's claim would have no practical effect on any existing controversy today. The Humane Society has not challenged Senate Bill 795 on substantive grounds. The Humane Society has not put in a claim for a refunding of their 2010 fee. They've not even challenged the 2011 version of the statute, probably because the Humane Society of the United States is the reason why we have that statute. They requested that the people of Missouri enact the Canine Cruelty Prevention Act by legislative initiative in 2011, and then participated in the tit for tat, as Mr. Cosgrove called it, when the when that proposition was negotiated among the legislators.
I think opposing counsel's argument, if I understood it at the end, is that this, if we approve what happened here, it will provide a new method for hiding changes of popular provisions. The earlier bill was just 7 days before the end of the session, got rid of exemptions, got rid of, say, a popular provision that people might like, and then that was hidden because then it was repealed and reenacted, and that new bill that repealed and reenacted it doesn't have to mention what was gotten rid of in the prior version, in the prior bill. So people might not realize that a popular provision has ever been gotten rid of because it happened at the very end of the session without much public attention or hearing, and then it's never mentioned again because it's not being gotten rid of by the second bill, and that in effect has the same effect as log rolling, which is prohibited by the Constitution.
It seems to me that while it would take an enormous amount of coordination among the General Assembly in order to effect an intent of that nature, the only solution, if the legislature were to effect that intent, would be to allow them to repeal the offending provision of the statute in the next legislative session and reenact in lieu thereof a new provision and let everyone debate the bill. The Humane Society of the United States in 2011 had the opportunity to lobby their legislature, to discuss amendments with the legislature, to appear at hearings and to testify. And whether they took that opportunity on that specific provision in 2011 or not is somewhat irrelevant at this point because they admit that they had that opportunity in 2011. Not only do they factually admit that they had that opportunity, but in fact they did have that opportunity because the General Assembly was considering a vast overhaul of the commercial breeding law statutes, and almost every provision within the Animal Care Facilities Act was repealed and reenacted that year. And that law remains in effect today. The 2011 version of the law remains in effect today. So whatever decision this court could make about the 2010 version of the law, the animal shelters in Missouri would still have to pay up to $2,500 in licensing fees. The exemption was debated in 2011 and is simply gone. Now, the Humane Society asked this court to reconsider its C.C. Dillon case. They say it's bad public policy. The C.C. Dillon case was a case issued by this court in 2000, which relied on a 1936 case, State v. Peebles. And while the C.C. Dillon case cited Bank of Washington and State v. Peebles, many cases exist in the interim. where this court routinely decides that cases of this nature are without merit. One case states that it, quote, doesn't even merit further discussion. Moreover, the provisions in C.C. Dillon does not encourage legislative log rolling. Rather, the opportunity to debate the bill would be afforded to the parties at the subsequent enactment in the legislature. I want the court to consider for a moment, what if this court decides to strike down the 2010 version of the statute and allow that constitutional defect to carry through to the 2011 statute, what would be the remedy? The General Assembly has spoken twice. It wants animal shelters to pay license fees. So the only remedy the General Assembly would have would be to repeal 273327 and reenact it again with the licensing fee exemption removed. That cries in the face of judicial and legislative efficiency and doesn't even make sense. It leads to a completely absurd result.
So to reach for this court to agree with you that that this question is moot, do we need even to address one way or the other whether or not the procedures in the 2010 bill were correct?
No, the court does not need to address whether or not the procedures in the 2010 bill were correct. The court could easily declare that this, as the trial court did, that this case is moot, that the statute upon which the litigants rely no longer exists. The only statute in effect today is 2011, and that statute has not been challenged. If the court does decide to reach the question of whether or not the 2010 version of the bill violated the original purpose provisions of the Constitution, the court should find that it did not violate the provisions of the Constitution. The original purpose of the bill in 2010 was to regulate agricultural industry.
It didn't say that, though, did it?
It
said blasting.
The title of the bill said blasting safety, but the original purpose of a bill, according to the Strobe Brewing Company case, the C.C. Dillon case, the Ward case, must be measured by the title and the contents of the bill. And while the bill was titled an act to amend the Blasting Safety Act, the actual bill itself regulated agricultural industry.
It regulated blasting, right, in certain holes.
Agricultural purposes. The bill immediately passed to the House Committee on Agriculture. It then went to the Senate Committee on Agriculture. All subsequent amendments to the bills dealt with agriculture, including the final bill related to commercial dog breeding facilities, which is solely regulated in the purview of the Department of Agriculture in the state of Missouri, something the Humane Society of the United States, Dogwood Animal Shelter, and Stray Rescue, the latter two of which are licensed by the Department of Agriculture, know full well. In conclusion, Your Honors, the state believes that this case is completely moot. There's nothing on which this court could decide this matter that would give any effect to any existing controversy today. And if there are no further questions, I rest.
Thank you very much. Efficient use of your time.
I have 10 seconds. I have 3 minutes. I will use all of it. Peebles, 1936, the Supreme Court articulates two sentences about this issue. The Dillon case cites the first sentence. The Attorney General relies upon Dillon and the first sentence. Look at the second sentence. The first sentence says that if a bill is repealed and a different bill or a different section is enacted in lieu thereof, the point is moot. The second sentence of Peebles that Dillon ignored, the Attorney General ignored, says, but if it acts as an amendment of the subsequent bill, that's of a horse of a different color. That is the horse that is standing right there. The second sentence of Peebles is why this case is different than Dillon, which relies upon the first sentence of Peebles. The Attorney General would have you believe that this case is moot because members of the public had an opportunity to come before the legislature and ask their beholden to cure their unconstitutional behavior the year before. That is not the Constitution. We don't have to do that. We don't have to go to hearings about 161 and persuade them that they engage in unconstitutional behavior and they should put the exemption back. That is what this court is for. And if what they did in 2010 is void, then it didn't exist when it was reenacted into 161. That turns the Constitution on its head. Another issue, think about this. A little birdie told me that there's currently a constitutional challenge to Senate Bill 161. I had until last year to challenge this bill. What happens if you all rule that Senate Bill 161 is unconstitutional? The mootness is moot, but I'm out of time to challenge. We had discussions. Mr. Cosgrove, if you challenge Dylan, will we get sanctioned? I said, I've got no money. I don't care. Okay? But if we had not challenged because of Dylan, 6 months from now, you might say 161 is unconstitutional and strike it. And I'm out of luck because
well,
I read
Dylan.
Well,
then you'd have a different constitutional argument to make here were that the case.
I'm sorry, ma'am?
Then you might have a different constitutional argument to make here about whether you had reasonable time to challenge, but that's not the issue here today.
Well, I would have filed my suit after the constitutional deadline, and the Attorney General would rightfully enough said he's passed his constitutional deadline. It's not our fault that he did not foresee the abrogation of 161.
The statute of limitations is not in the Constitution, right?
I think I have within the end of the subsequent legislative session.
Right. There's a statute.
Challenge.
The statute.
There's a statute. It's a statute of limitations as opposed
to
a constitutional provision.
Sure.
What if
I stand corrected.
Well, what if for sake of argument that a majority of the legislators decided to take serious their oath to support the Constitution, including the procedural provisions? Are you saying that they, even though they might not have been a part of the General Assembly that acted in an unconstitutional manner, could never rectify the procedural violation?
Oh, they absolutely could have.
Okay. And your suggestion is they had to do more than what they did because they had to deal with it anew.
Absolutely. Okay. They could have bolded the exemption. They could have notified the public in a bill that wasn't about dynamite. And they could have had a discourse about, okay, so last year we kind of did it wrong. So we're going to now have a publicly noticed discourse about whether not-for-profit should pay fees.
That's the nub of your argument, isn't it? That in 161, there wasn't anything bolded or bracketed to call the public's attention to the fact that the exemption was being taken out.
Thank you, Judge Wilson. Exactly.
And which part of the Constitution addresses bolding and bracketing?
It doesn't. The point is, as a pragmatic matter, the constitutional prejudice was never remedied. Article 21, avoid. You're supposed to provide notice to the public, provide notice to the General Assembly at large, and prevent the governor from having to take it or leave a decision. None of that was addressed in 161. Nothing. None. It's simply in Section B, the very final sentence, said, we're repealing and reenacting what we did wrong in the prior years. And so if the words of the Constitution are to be given meaning, then the subsequent legislative conduct needs to address the prejudice of the constitutional violation. If they had done that, it would be a different argument. I'd be more strenuous. They didn't even try. They just took what was done in the dark and did it in the dark again. Thank you very much, members of the
Court. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under submission.